Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Good afternoon. This is The Film Show on Sheffield Live, and I'm Martin.
And I'm Denise. Good afternoon, welcome to The Film Show.
Good afternoon, here
now,
we are yet again.
I'm not saying it's spring yet, but for the first time since, I don't know, August, September, I walked to the studio this morning and I thought, oh, I might have put an extra layer on here than I need. It's getting brighter, it's a lovely day.
I can't remember, it seemed to have been ages since we actually did the show and looked out the window and the sun was out.
What is that huge orb in the sky?
It's a bits and pieces week in sorts of ways. And,
yeah.
I told you it was the Oscars this weekend.
I know, and do you know what?
This
must be the year I've been the least interested in the Oscars, because yes. I just went, nah. Yeah. To be fair, they haven't been selling it as much with all of the fires in LA. They've been underplaying the lead in deliberately.
But we shall talk anon about said awards. Right.
Well, there's a bit of news this week about Amazon buying up stuff again.
Yeah, Amazon have bought out Barbara Broccoli and Michael Wilson from the Bond franchise.
So I saw a bit of this. Does this mean it's not a Broccoli?
They are now stepping back. I think Amazon paid them $1 billion.
That is a massive change.
And they've taken over complete control of Bond. Now, Broccoli and Wilson, I think, have been incredibly careful with that franchise for years and years and years. You know, the films would come out maybe every 2 to 3 years. You know, they weren't rushing to make something every year. And they were very, very careful with the marketing and sort of every aspect of it. It was something there, there's everything else and there's Bond.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to change.
How?
Because I've got a horrible feeling we're very soon going to have the Bond universe thrust upon us.
Oh. I have a very strange sort of fondness for Bond, which is sort of grounded in I'm a feminist. How can I be a fan of Bond?
You can be a fair weather feminist when it suits you.
But I have, and it seems like it's alternate Bonds I like.
Yeah.
So I like Sean Connery, Roger Moore, no. George Lazenby, yes. Timothy Dalton, yes. Pierce Brosnan, not for me.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig, obviously, love him. So I'm prepared for the next one, not liking it at all, but this is too big a change for me, I feel.
Yes, I think this thing of having that franchise to exploit, I mean, it's quite terrifying what we could be in for. Like Rosa Klebb, the early years. Or is she just Moneypenny?
I dread
you
to
thought
think.
She was just a secretary, but in her early days, she was an active agent out there in the 1960s. Mm.
Oh. Mm.
M.
M, the A to M.
And then that'll go back to the Second World War. And then they'll be able to have Bond in all these different time periods. You know, Victorian Bond, not Basildon Bond.
Oh gosh!
World War One Bond.
Have they made
World
any
War
sort of
II
statement
Bond?
About what they're planning, or is it just
it's just with Bezos
grabbing money
at the moment? Mm. But you could. I've got a horrible, horrible feeling they will flog this to death, and I mean we're already going through that ritual of who is the next Bond going to be. Well, I mean,
who cares now?
It could be Johnny Depp now, couldn't it? If it's Amazon or Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, it doesn't even, you can't see them wanting to. They're just bring a big name in.
Do you know what? I suppose, though, it feels like Bond's been getting to the end of Bond's life for a long time.
I have to say, I thought No Time to Die was a good place to leave.
Yeah, and for some people, that might be where we do leave it.
It might be. Mm. And is there anybody out there who hasn't seen No Time to Die?
Don't know.
Because he dies in the end. There you go.
Oh, well, you guarding yourself from spoilers there. Yeah. I think it's pretty well known, though.
We're talking 4 years here. You know,
that turned out to be the Broccoli Swan song then as well. Yeah.
And you know, they've had a fair bit of time to sort of make an announcement of some sort, and obviously, I think this has been churning through the system. For it to, for them to have kept stum about it, and now it's gonna, well, yeah,
when we started this conversation, I felt a bit sad about it, and now I'm like, well, good,
I think
it's 2025, let it go.
The way I'd look at it is, I can't see any good coming out of this. So we've got 25 films that we can pick and choose from as the ones that we like, I think. And I think that's as good as it's going to get.
I mean, it lasted longer than it should have, really.
Was it 60-odd years? Wasn't it? It was
62, 61?
62, yeah, something like that. Yeah, and, you know, there's some stinkers. You know, I never talked to Roger Moore.
Me neither.
Never talked to it. I thought Timothy Dalton was good, and he should have been given more time.
I loved Timothy Dalton.
And my favourite Bond is the George Lazenby one. I think that is an absolute...
It's a cracker of a film, yeah. Especially when you watch it, like, retrospectively and go, well, this... At the time, you thought he was the new Bond, and then he wasn't. But looking back on it, it's a single film. It works on its own, yeah.
And
Diana Rigg, obviously, is
best Bond
stunning,
girl ever. Yeah.
And I really liked Timothy Dalton as Bond. And I went to see, with my friend, I think we were 15 or 16 at the time, we went to see License to Kill about 10 times at the cinema. Because it had some really funny lines in it. His accent comes through, because he's from North Wales, I think, Timothy Dalton, but his accent was almost Northern English at times. It was very strange. I can't quote the line because it's the B word and I don't want to say that on the radio, but there's a bit where he's aiming. Yeah. What he says, watch the bird, you Brexit. But it sounds really Northern. Yeah. Oh, hilarious. Love him.
And I went to see... that one, License to Kill.
I'm Gladys Knight did the song, it was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was about 2 years ago, because my nephew's an absolute fanatic for one, and it was shown at the Prince Charles. So we went, and I hadn't seen it for donkey's years, and Benicio Del Toro is one of the villains.
He's so mean, he's like, his face
and
is...
And he goes through that rock grinder, doesn't he? And there's not much left of him by the end.
Because it's
the
bit where they put the cocaine through to turn it into...
Oh, happy days. Happy days. all we can say is... Look at you'll hear it
shall
here
I
first.
Ring? Shall I ring something
sorry.
For it? This is... Well, no, this
yeah,
is for Bond.
For Bond, yes, please.
Could be the end. There
for
we
those
go.
That have loved him. Just a bit of news coming from the Glasgow Film Festival.
A film festival I've actually been to.
Yes.
Yeah.
And did you enjoy it there?
I did, yeah. I really liked it. It's a bit of a different film festival to some of those, like the Berlins and the Londons, because it's not you buying individual tickets for the...
I was actually thinking I might go to that next year.
What, Berlin?
No, Glasgow, actually.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Or maybe.
Why not this year?
Go to. Well, it's on now, isn't it?
But it's on for like a week and a half.
Well, I'll have to go now then, won't I? Leave you doing the rest of the show.
Well, go in about 45 minutes.
I like to prepare. I like to prepare, and I'd like to have seen what was on and plan out.
Well, what is tasty there?
Well, the opening film was something called Tornado. Let me get this right. Let me read it right. Which is a samurai western set in 18th century Scotland.
18th century?
18th, set in 1790.
And it's a samurai western?
Yeah, it stars Tim Roth. And it's about two Japanese, a man and a woman who travel around doing this sort of... Bushido show and some puppetry and that. And, of course, as you would expect, they're also master samurai as well. Tim Roth is leading a bunch of violent ruffians. It's all going to end in lopped off limbs and blood spouting everywhere. But it's directed by a guy, and I have to talk for a minute while I call his name up. A young guy made a really interesting film.
What?
A couple of years back, a Scottish guy. It was something called Slow West. Did you ever see that?
No, I don't think so.
Michael Fassbender and Ben Mendelsohn were in it. And it was like a really weird film. It'd been made for 10 bob, you know. They might have even filmed it in Kilmarnock, for all I know.
Nothing wrong with Kilmarnock. Been there for
the Badlands, as it's also known. But it was a really, it was really, really good fun, I was really impressed with it. And I saw where was I? I was in Dublin, and it was on. There was a special preview of it. John McLean was the director, and he did a Q&A afterwards, which was really interesting.
I could have helped you out a bit more there.
You could have, but I thought, no, just leave it. But I will get my revenge. Thanks for that.
John McLean,
yeah. And Slow West is a great little Western. Samurai Western set in 18th century Scotland.
It's got to be worth a punt, hasn't it?
Come on. tell me that ain't going to be worth your money on a wet Wednesday afternoon.
Guess now which limbs get chopped off.
There goes your arm.
Yeah.
Okay, that's...
That's Glasgow done.
What else we got? Padding this out a bit this week because we haven't got many reviews this week.
No.
I'll warn you.
I'll tell you what, though. Here goes the bell.
Thank you. This is a sad one for me. Mm. One of my favourite actors.
And we mentioned this last week, didn't we? Yeah. But we had to...
Genevieve Page. Maybe not one of the most well-known names, but she had a very long career in theatre and in cinema. And she had this great period during the 1960s where she was in a number of really memorable films. And some of these films, she was in some really big Hollywood movies, such as El Cid. She was in John Frankenheimer's Grand Prix, which Francoise Hardy was also in there as well. Mm-hmm. So that's a film that's very rarely off of my DVD player, that one. and maybe most famously in Bunuel's Belle du Jour, where she plays the madam of the brothel that Catherine Deneuve works
in. I think, that's the... When we talked about her last week briefly, that's the one I knew her from.
Yeah, and... I mean, she was icily cool. And in fact, it's really weird, I think, because when I watch Belle du Jour, it's like Deneuve, who is normally the ice queen, to me seems, quite
positively glowing, yeah.
And then Genevieve Page comes in and the temperature plummets. But my favourite film of hers, and it's actually one of my very favourite films, and it's Billy Wilder's The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes from 1970, where she plays the spy. She's sort of like a bit of a Mata Hari figure, Gabrielle Valadon, who turns out to be the greatest love of Sherlock Holmes' life. And she just looks incredible, I think, in every scene in this film. The wardrobe... she has in this is just incredible.
This is what, 1970?
1970, yeah.
And that's Robert Stevens as Sherlock Holmes.
Robert Stevens as Sherlock Holmes and Colin Blakely as Dr. Watson.
Because he's a very full-on character, isn't he?
Yeah. Should we have a Robert Stevens tribute? Because there's a lot to say about him. But anyway, that was a sad one for me. And I did watch The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes last weekend to
I've just seen Irene Handel's in that as Mrs. Hudson.
It's used to be one of a great quiz thing is to sort of look at casts and say, would these two people ever have been in the same
film? Can you imagine
film?
Genevieve Page and Irene Handel having a cup of tea in between takes?
Can you imagine Jack Nicholson and Irene Handel?
Yes, I can.
Because that's an actual... That's
what film was that?
That happened. On a clear day, you can see forever.
Oh. Irene Handel, love it. Oh, gorgeous.
Oh! Right.
We've got a little bit of trailer trash, haven't we?
Just a little bit.
We were going to do this a couple of weeks ago, I think, but we were off air.
That's probably my fault.
It is St. David's Day, isn't it?
What, when this comes out?
No.
Today, is it? Yeah. I always thought it was later in the month.
Yeah, I've got a feeling. Well, it's definitely the month of the Welsh, because it's St. Patrick's Day later as well, and he's practically Welsh.
That's a bit of a point. I think thousands of Irish listeners there will be...
Oh, no, they all know he's Welsh.
Well, I think that's a big assumption there.
He's the patron saint of Ireland, but he's Welsh. True story. Anyway, I'm diverting you from the Welsh marathon that will be Mr. Burton.
Mr. Burton. I saw a lovely trailer in a way, but it also depresses me immensely. This is something that's been cooked up in a studio laboratory. We'll take a bit of this, and if we put him in...
Is there anyone Welsh maybe playing have a, Welsh
it doesn't seem to be
it.
Anybody Welsh in it at all, which is exactly how it should be. So those Mexicans who were moaning about Emilio Perez just don't worry about it. So it's this is the story of the young Richard Burton, how Richard Burton became a star of theatre and cinema.
But it's his early years, isn't it?
It's his early years.
Because he named himself after this teacher, Mr. Burton.
Who is played by maybe our greatest national treasure at the moment, person who is... giving Olivia Colman a bit of a run for her money.
The saviour of the post office. Mr. Toby Jones.
Mr. Toby Jones. And he plays a teacher who takes the young, unruly Burton youth under his wing and nurtures his talent for acting. And just to give it that extra bit of, let's get those sort of people who only go to the cinema once a year to see a film bit to it. It has got the ubiquitous, the hardest working woman in show business.
Don't you be dissing her.
I'm not dissing her, I'm just saying. It'd be nice if she had a rest. Leslie Manville. Dame Leslie Manville. Surely that can't be that far off now.
Not yet.
And she's his housekeeper, isn't she? By the look of it.
Yeah, I think so. Or his aunt or someone.
Or something like that. It's all glowing cinematography of
the Welsh hills
and the valleys and the mine shafts.
Is it filmed in New Zealand or in Wales?
It's probably been filmed in a lock-up in Battersea and they've green-screened everything.
I think Harry Lawty's playing the young Richard and he was in... Did you watch Industry, the TV series?
No, I didn't.
No, I watched the first couple of series of it. I haven't watched the latest one.
I started
one.
Watching it and I think it was... I didn't take to it. But sometimes when you're watching a lot of other stuff, something can be good, but you think, I ain't got the time.
He's quite interesting as an actor. I'll give him that. there's definitely a Welsh person in it.
Faint praise.
I think the Welsh actors are playing supporting parts by the looks of it. There's a Stefan Rodri playing Dr. Dick Jenkins, and Daniel Evans is an unnamed person in it. So he was probably doing a little bit of a... pin money part there.
Oh, you say that the thespian population of Wales is going to be, they're going to live on that for what, about 5 minutes?
You can't be mean about the Welsh because I'm half Welsh.
I'm not mean,
and it is St. David's
Day. I'm not
mean
about the Welsh. I'm just saying this whole thing about, you have Toby Jones doing a Welsh. Oh, it's always Toby Jones Welsh.
I don't know. Well, he's got a very good name.
Well, exactly. That's probably... he's not Welsh, but he's got a Welsh name. He is Freddie Jones' son, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh. Didn't know that.
There you go. See, and I didn't look as frantically look through...
He's definitely...
Where I was trying to find John McLean's name. I've just got that off the top of my head.
He's definitely English, Toby Jones.
Is he?
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me. What about Leslie Manville?
He's very English.
Very English. I can't believe her and Gary Oldman being man and wife, can you?
I can.
No. Well, they were in The Firm
together
weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And she's brilliant in that. When the baby puts a knife in his mouth.
Oh, I don't remember that bit. It's a long time since I've seen that film.
Everything and blinding that goes on in that, I don't know. But anyway, we digress.
Yes, we do. Mr. Burton, when's that out? We don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
Do we care?
Well, when it does come out...
It's out next month.
She'll be everywhere.
It's out early April. Early April.
It'll be like almost like a patriotic duty to go and see that.
Well, do you know what? I've read I haven't read all of the Burton Diaries, but I've read sections of the Burton Diaries, and they're quite good because he tends to write when not much is happening. So if you go for the juicy bits, like, oh, when he was in that with Liz Taylor,
yeah.
He's not writing his diary then because he's busy, you know, having fun with Liz Taylor. Yeah.
Or he was so drunk he couldn't put pen to paper.
Wow. Yeah.
And good luck to him on that. Good luck to him. Because there are a couple of films which I think he's absolutely stamming in. Wasted a lot of his talent, but...
I wish I'd seen him. Sometimes when you can get that chance to time travel, that's something I'd like to see on stage.
Yeah.
Oh, shall we play a bit of music?
Music, Maestro.
Well, because we're going to talk about somebody else after this piece of music. Shall I go straight into music? Yeah.
You're going to tell everybody what it is first, or you
Yeah, well, this is the theme from The French Connection.
Who could we be talking about?
A statement of a soundtrack.
That's a great track, that,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
So we're going to... Hang on. obviously in the news everywhere at the moment,
yes.
Is the very sad death of Gene Hackman at the age of 95. What an illustrious, what a long career as well. Although we were talking earlier, and some of the later films in his career, I'm not that familiar with.
Some of the earlier, was it? Well, he started late.
Yeah, so well, he had.
Was in his 30s when he started.
Well, he was in a lot of theatre and supporting roles in like the 50s, 60s. He was in Downhill Racer in like 1967, Bonnie and Clyde. He got a supporting nomination actor, I think, for his role in Bonnie and Clyde.
And he also won another another actor nomination for One Could I Never Sang for My Father.
Yes.
Which is a film I've never seen.
But there was a lot of, so in that early career, a lot of supporting roles, a lot of sort of cult films as well. Downhill Racer especially was, it's sort of well thought of now, I believe.
Directed by Michael
really,
Ritchie, who is a really interesting director. Mm.
But it's fair to say his sort of leading man status was the theme from the thing we've just heard, The French Connection in 1971.
That was where all of a sudden
he was super.
Everybody
super
knew
famous.
Who he was.
Yeah. And that was I rewatched that because I haven't watched that for a long, long time. I rewatched it last night, in fact, that night before last. And he was not afraid, was he, of being highly unpleasant on screen and undesirable?
Yeah.
Like, so he plays that. So Popeye Doyle is the cop. It's based on a real person. He is with his partner. Trying to break down a drugs deal of this Mr. Big from Marseille, smuggling in
Fernando
heroin.
Ray, yeah. Yes.
Smuggling in heroin into the country.
Yeah.
It's chaotic. He is dogged, but it's chaotic. It's such a grim, horrible New York that they're in.
It captures that look of early 70s New York where it seems like the sun never shines, everything is grey and dirty, and it just creates this atmosphere of, you know, the city of New York, which I don't think any film up to then had properly managed to capture that. I mean, obviously they filmed most of it, I think, on location, and that was still a relatively rare way to make a film back then in the early 70s.
But in that, he's such a highly unpleasant character. And I think some of the later films, some of his later parts, he's like the go-to baddie for the army or the navy or the lawyer or the... Like, I tried to watch Runaway Jury the other night. couldn't get through it. It wasn't for me. But he was like the go-to, we need a guy that doesn't care that everyone hates him. And that's Gene Hackman.
Yeah. What do you know? I see recently, it was another Michael Ritchie film, Prime Cut, where he comes up against Lee Marvin. Have you ever seen that one?
No. Nope.
And Gene Hackman is down out in the Rust Belt taking over all the drugs and prostitution, and Lee Marvin's sent down from Chicago to sort him out. And he's sent down from Chicago because one of the mob's guys has been knocked off by Hackman's boys, and they've turned him into sausages. The credit sequence covers this body going through a meat processing plant.
What era was this?
It was about 90s. It's just after the French Connection. This year.
Yeah, it was. Everything was grim in the 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they weren't afraid to tell you.
they were quite nice, I must say. tasty.
I think we're going to play some music from it a bit later as well. But
yeah.
the Conversation is, I think, if I think of one film that is his masterpiece, I think The Conversation is a stunning performance and a great film.
It's one of those performances where he's so repressed, isn't he? His character is so repressed and so fastidious about what, which is, he makes illicit recordings for vast amounts of money so they can be used for industrial political espionage. And the only pleasure he seems to get in life is to sit in his sparse, empty apartment and play saxophone every now and again, isn't it? And it's a desperately sad life that he's got. But yeah, a cracking film. It's one of those films. Not much really seems to go on, but you have to sort of work out what exactly is going on.
Yeah,
because it's not.
It's not a dip in and out film,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
In the 80s, Mississippi Burning, a little bit. He didn't really have much controversy in his filmmaking, but I think Mississippi Burning hit some controversy. It was Alan Parker, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
But it was based on real events, and there was a lot of fabrication in the part of the story, I think, which...
But then these things always have to have that, don't they? It's like, you know, if you're trying to tell a big story like that, characters will be composites, won't they, of real people. Events will be not in the strict order that they happened. I think...
Well, he was.
I think that's just the nature of making a feature film.
He was nominated again for that for Best Actor, and he lost out to his old buddy Dustin Hoffman.
And they
in
were
Rain Man.
And they were acting school together, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Where both of them were regarded as least likely to succeed.
I don't think they made it. Like, I don't think they graduated. I think they then met up working in theatre together.
Oh, was it then?
Right. No, but I think they both were...
Well, he left.
They were
didn't he?
At school together, but they didn't make it. Yeah.
Hackman certainly didn't see it through to the end.
This just shows you what are those guys now.
But he wasn't... By the sound of it, he wasn't always a very pleasant person to work with. He was very... He didn't suffer fools gladly.
Well,
I
love that phrase, because who does?
Yeah.
Like, oh, would you like to suffer some fools? Oh, gladly. Nobody says that. But I think he didn't... It sounds like he didn't go on to a set to have fun.
No,
he did
it was
the work.
A job of work.
And there was an interesting chat with Bill Murray the other day, who co-starred in Royal Tenenbaums with him, with Wes Anderson-directed film. And he wasn't comfortable, it sounds like, on that set at first, because he felt like the old guy who, you know, and these were sort of young upstarts.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like Wes Anderson had a great time with him. But they made a great film.
Yeah.
And
sometimes it's that, I mean, apparently he was very, he had lots of run-ins with Anderson, you know. Who are you? I've got two Oscars, you know, what have you ever done? He could be, it sounds like, quite abrasive. And if he thought you were not up to what he regarded as the standard you should be, he'd let you know about it. I mean, the other thing, looking through a lot of this, he made a load of rubbish films as well, didn't he?
But I don't think he was ever rubbish
in
them. And there was a lot of like 80s and 90s type of films, the parts that were available for someone of his age and experience were, we need a bad colonel in the army or the navy. We need a lawyer who's corrupt.
I can't remember half of these films. And also, they're films, I can't even remember that he was in them. but, you know, but every now, you know, I'd say probably be for every bad one, there's a good one. So that's not a bad average when you made as many films as what he did. It's like he never stopped working.
Well, what I think in 2004, so his last film was Welcome to Moosebrook, which I haven't seen, but it's a comedy with Ray Romano. And I'm like, and that's when he decided, I think I'm going to go and retire with my lovely younger wife and have a nice time.
And of course, well, we have to mention the fact that the actual event of his death is still shrouded in mystery at the moment.
Yeah, everyone's speculating about it.
Yeah, and this isn't to speculate about it, but the facts are they don't quite know how he and his wife and their dog passed away. But I just read today that they believe that the bodies had been there for almost 2 weeks before they were discovered. So, which is a very, very sad way to go, but there's just so many films that he is great in, that you could make a choice of... he didn't often do anything that was a bit out there. As you say, he was uncomfortable with the Royal Tenenbaums. And one of the most extraordinary films he made was Nicholas Roeg's Eureka.
Which I haven't seen. I've heard by reputation, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, and I think he clashed with Roeg on that, which I can imagine. I mean, watching the dailies from that, I mean, it would have given anyone a nosebleed. But that's just one of those astounding films. You know, you think, how could anyone have ever thought this story up? So if you're feeling adventurous, that's the one I'd go for.
Eureka. What era are we here? 70s?
Early 80s.
Early 80s, right.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You gonna try that?
Maybe. It's on the pile.
I might do.
Let's have a listen to 50 years ago now, this, 51 even. The theme tune from, let's just say, The Masterpiece. And that was David Shire's theme from the conversation, Francis Ford Coppola's 1974 masterpiece, featuring the late Gene Hackman, who's died at the age of 95.
So are you going to give us your tip for a great Hackman film to see this weekend?
This weekend?
Oh, you know, if you had to choose a Hackman film to watch...
I'd probably go for The Conversation, because I haven't seen that for a few years.
You go on and on and on about The Conversation. You know, anything else?
We're having a conversation about The Conversation.
Anything else apart from it? And you keep using the word masterpiece, you know? That riles me up terribly.
I know.
It was a masterpiece. Oh, he was visionary.
I'd quite like to check out some early stuff, I think. Downhill Racer and Bonnie and Clyde, because, again, both films I've not seen for a long, long time.
Mm. Oh, Bonnie and Clyde... is terrific. Mm. I know I've said that the one I watched last night, Night Moves, which is it's a bit of a downer, though. Mm. One of those really sort of glum 1970s film where it's just all about disappointment and failure.
Well, I did start watching Runaway Juror last night, but I had to give up.
That's
and go
you
to
don't
bed.
Like films set in courtrooms,
but it is interesting because it was one of his. It was his last film before the Ray Romano one that we've no one seen, and it was, he did get to star alongside Dustin Hoffman in that film as well, who so it's quite nice that for his one of his last films they were together.
Oh, is that as, I'm so glad about that for
so him. Glad about that for them.
Good luck to you.
Well, all of these iconic actors are, you know, getting on. Dustin Hoffman, Jack Nicholson, that era of 70s Hollywood.
It's each breath could be your last.
Talking of getting on.
Talking of getting on. Would be me and you.
I was meant getting on in years.
All right.
Quite nicely ties in to our review this week that you've been to see.
Yes. The Last Showgirl with... oh, what's her name? Pamela Anderson.
Have a bit of a pause for that great segue?
Do you want to do it again?
No, that was enough, No. Pamela Anderson, come on.
So, it did creak a bit.
Did it?
The segue.
Oh, right.
Because I was frantically trying to find something on my phone. Well, you were just looking at me.
The Last Showgirl.
The Last Showgirl, then. Where Pamela Anderson is doing this... career-defining, career-changing, the role she was always born to play, as an ageing Vegas showgirl who has worked for 30-odd years in this really old-style Vegas show.
Giving me Follies vibes.
Yeah.
But for a later era.
Have you
era,
been to one of these shows?
Have I chuff, love?
You're going to be protesting outside. You're like, oh, give me this girl.
Hang on, I've just seen the new Bond film. I'll just go to a Last Showgirl type of fair. No, not for me.
Well, I've seen the sort of thing that they do. Not a full show, but I'm talking about back in the 80s. I was staying in a hotel on the Vegas Strip. And that's like really that older, seedier type of... Well, the casinos are much smaller. And the whole thing sort of has an air of end of the pier show.
So it's seedy even for Vegas.
Although I think they've been sort of giving it a once-over in recent years. But she's been in this show, the Razzle Dazzle show, and she's been doing this all her life.
Wait, the show is called Razzle Dazzle?
Razzle Dazzle, yes. Okay. I didn't make that up.
Okay.
And
it's from Chicago. Give them the old Razzle Dazzle. Razzle Dazzle.
That's probably what they're working on. Mm. And then the show is being forced to close. Because no one's going to see shows like that anymore, you know. Going to see Adele, Luxor or something like that, you know. I mean, Vegas is a very, very weird place. It's like you don't quite feel you're in real life at all. You feel you're on a movie set. And you always get to see that the character she plays, Shelley, is getting to a point in her life where she's got to find herself a new job.
Well, also, how is she still working on a show in her 50s?
Well, the fact is, they don't do much dancing. They just put on all this razzle-dazzle clobber And, you know, well, you know, it's you get the idea. It's more like a show at the windmill, you know, where the curtains used to pop.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd just be standing there. You know.
Oh, you're showing our age there.
Did you used to go to the windmill club, Lynn?
No, but I know what it is.
All right. And so this is like her coming to this moment in her life where she has to evaluate how she's lived her life. Her estranged daughter appears and they have a few encounters where they're either rowing or she's saying how sorry she is to her daughter. And then there's Dave Bautista, who plays the guy who manages the show, who we find out something about him later in the film. And Jamie Lee Curtis is there as a best friend who was a showgirl, but due to her even being older than what Pamela Anderson's character is now reduced to being a cocktail waitress.
She was working as
and so that's,
is this a musical? Am I?
the thing was, I don't know. I just thought, I think this film thinks it's a lot better than what it actually is.
Is it one of those films where, because there's an Oscar buzz about her? I mean, not likely that she'll win, but there was a bit of an Oscar buzz about her being nominated anyway. Yeah. Is it one of those films where it's just, oh, Pamela Anderson's quite good in this, it must be a great film, and it's not that, not that great.
She is great in it. And I'm not saying that that is what her life was, because I think there's so much more about Pamela Anderson and some of the causes that she supported during her time, which, you know, would make you think, no, she's not just someone from Baywatch who made a porn tape with her husband. You know, that's the sort of thing that she's regularly looked at as being famous for.
Because that's how we frame women.
It's directed by Gia Coppola. That name should give you a clue who her dad might be. I wonder how she got that job.
Granddad, I think.
Is it granddad? Yeah. Oh, right, there you go. I'm losing track of how old I am now.
Sorry to break it to you.
I just thought, thank God it's only an hour and a half, this. There's all these frequent moments where it's just her being filmed walking along the Vegas Strip, or, you know, just lighting a cigarette, the wind blowing, and her looking miserably in a big wide sunglasses, and some plaintive music playing. And I thought, oh, yeah, all right, I get it, but the character seemed to have made all these choices as to where she was going to, how she was going to live her life, so I didn't feel particularly sorry for the character at the end of it, and that was why I thought it's not as, there isn't any sort of emotional punch to this, I didn't find. It was a life that someone had chosen to live, and well, she was living it. She seemed to enjoy it, but it was like all good things coming to an end, you know. And,
How, overall, we're going to say,
I'm going to say, one of those that when you first heard about it, you would think this is going to be sensational.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. Mm. But I've got to be honest, it's not.
So maybe worth seeing for her performance, or?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, dear.
You know, if you really want to go to the cinema to see it, it's a terrible thing, because it'll be on telly in a few weeks.
Oh, that's a non-rate, I'm going to say.
That's
non-rate, not quite a slate. In the middle. Okay, let's hear a nice piece of music from Paul Simon. We'll be right back.
pajama, rolled out of bed, and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout, and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what did mama saw? It was against the law. Ooh, the mama looked down and spit on the ground every time her name gets mentioned. The papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Mama, take me away, but the press let the story leak. Now when the radical preach come to get me released, we's all on the cover of Newsweek. And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Me and Julio down in the schoolyard, which featured in The Royal Tenenbaums, which was one of Gene Hackman's later roles. That was a lovely sequence where he was messing around with the twins, the boys with the red track suits. Do you remember that sequence? It's a nice little montage.
I remember the boys with the red track suits.
Yeah, there was him.
It's been donkeys.
He was messing around with them. Yeah, it was good. It's good fun bit. So what's coming up? What's on this week? Coming up at the pictures. Mickey 17 is released on Friday.
Oh.
That's on at the Light in the Showroom.
There you go.
There's a documentary about Twiggy, directed by Sadie Frost, which might be interesting. That's on at the Light and the Showroom. Wild at Heart, if you want to catch up with your David Lynch screenings, that's at the Light.
Peru, like the country. And we talked about the Brutalist is being shown at the Parkway Cinema, Barnsley, in 70mm, and that is on until Thursday. Please check times.
Yes. But also, this weekend, as Martin mentioned, 'tis the time of the Oscars. We don't really care who wins what, but we will talk about it next week.
We'll tell you what. We'll talk about what did win.
So we're going to play out with one last track, which is another track to celebrate the lovely, much-missed Gene Hackman. This is a song, Hoodoo Gurus.
A tribute song,
I think. Yeah. We'll see you next week. Enjoy your films.